Hey, everybody. Welcome to The Big Ticket, Variety and iHeart's movie podcast. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. On today's show, it's all about uncut gems. I sat down with the film's star, Adam Sandler, and his directors, Benny and Josh Safdie, in September, shortly after the movie was one of the big breakouts of Telluride and the Toronto Film Festival. Sandler explained where he found inspiration to play Howard, a con man from New York's Diamond District with a nasty gambling addiction, and how he's feeling about being a part of this year's Oscar conversation. His work earned him a Gotham Award nomination, and most recently he was named Best Actor by the National Board of Review. I'll have Adam and the Safdie brothers coming up after the break. Stick around. Welcome back to The Big Ticket. Here's Uncut Gems star Adam Sandler and the film's directors, Benny and Josh Safdie. This is
the definitely first gave you the good seat.
A lot of receivers.
It's a normal day.
Right.
And that's my producer, James.
Hello. Hi, producer James.
Good to see you, James.
So I don't know if anybody's told you, but I'm obsessed with this movie. I saw it at Telluride.
Yeah.
And it has stuck with me.
That's crazy.
I cannot stop thinking about
incredible.
It.
Incredible.
Because I know Howard. Yeah, I know that guy. I grew up in Queens, New York.
Oh, really?
Queens. Okay.
And I tell people, I'm like, you don't understand. Adam Sandler got the guy. I feel like they really exist. I'm like, the tea, the glasses, bringing the shirts in that are like in the plastic bags. My mom worked in the garment district.
Oh, really?
Right? Wow. My dad was in bedding on 32nd and 5th. So
amazing.
You know what I'm talking about.
Great. Our Ronnie, our collaborator, his dad's a Garmento, and Wayne Diamond, actually,
his
who shows up at the end of the movie, who's in the Mohegan Sun suite section, he's like a Garmento legend. Google Wayne Diamond is back. Google Wayne Diamond is back, and just have fun watching that 7-minute teaser. Have you ever seen that?
This is your childhood.
Well, up until I think I was 7 or 8, our dad worked for a guy named Howard, actually, and
my dad's name is Howard, by the way.
Oh, really? Yeah. Love it. Does he go by Howie?
Does he go by Howie?
He's passed, but he did Howard. Yeah.
So Howard was this guy. I remember our dad actually. There's so many incredible little stories that he would tell us, and weirdly enough, that was in the first draft that we wrote in 2009, 2010, right. And they were all kind of went away, but they were all great stories. They were all like little pulp narratives,
right.
And some of them were really great. There was one I'll tell very quickly. There was a company car. It was like a tiny little white gremlin thing. Remember, he would drive it around.
So
and,
small.
And they would...
The whole family packed in this.
People, by the way, they would poke the tire in Midtown, and then they would follow the car out so that when he would get out to change the tire, they would rob him.
They would also
call
in a delivery to a very desolate part of town.
So he knew about that scam, so he felt the tire go out of rim, and he looked in his rearview mirror, and he saw someone following him. Not stopping. So he returned the car with the rim was like a little pebble. But he went out to this jewelry store in Brooklyn, and... he said he was doing a deal in the front, and he heard hip hop from the back. And he's like, "What is that?" They had a recording booth in the back of this jewelry shop, and people who couldn't pay for their jewelry, who were buying jewelry, would press records, hip hop records. Some of them became big rappers. Isn't that
amazing.
So cool?
Yeah.
Anyway,
the idea was there was this.
That's a little story, but none of those made it into the movie.
The idea behind this man who could create these legends, these little legends around everybody, and it was just an amazing thing, and it only kind of existed in that spot of town.
Right. So, well, what I say when I. God, it's going to be all about me. But what I say when I'm talking about
it. I like when movies make things all about people.
No, but when I talk about it, I'm like, I could say this, I'm Jewish. I have to give. He's a Jew.
Yes.
He's the Jew we all know.
Yes.
I'm like, but if you're not Jewish, you can't say that.
That's true.
Do you know a Howard?
I know a lot of Howards I've met. I mean, the guys here, when they would discuss. This was a long process of putting together who Howard was. We talked Al Goldstein for a while. Wow. We talked a lot of guys on the block we got to
Rodney.
Know.
Dangerfield.
Yeah. Roddy Dangerfield. Just strong Jews that just...
A little bit of your dad.
A little. Yeah. I told him stories about my dad when he was strong at times. And we had, I actually... In the movie, look a little like my dad. I would show him pictures of my dad because they created the look. We took a long time making sure who what he dressed like. But yes, I've known a lot, and my uncle also worked in the garment district. So when we were shooting around there, that area I was very familiar with, and grew up being in that neighborhood and being around a lot of guys like that. But the more we isolated 47th Street, yeah, and the more we talked to guys who gave us so much time, mm-hmm, and gave us days on end of sitting in the shop and watching them talk and listening and picked up so much, many things and stories.
But what do you think they're going to think when they see the movie?
Like, you understand, they're going to be, this is what they live for. Because it's so, what's happened in the 21st century is there's been this kind of confluence of like movies and real life, and you don't know who's leading what. And it goes from like, you know, Goodfellas to like, you know, and like the idea of like the Jews and the Italians being similar. There's it all. So they're going to see a movie like this, for example, like, it's a terrible thing happened in the Diamond District. Thank God everyone's okay. But the kid who plays his older son, mm-hmm, in the movie, his name is, in real life, is Johnny Aramayev, and his family is the Aviani family. And they're one of the biggest jewelers on 47th Street. Wow. And they got robbed for $8 million.
2 minutes.
On a Sunday. And if you watch the video that's unfortunately available, and I tried getting it taken down, but if you watch the video, the kid who had the moment the gun comes out, it's a 14-year-old kid, and it's Eddie. But then I'm texting with Eddie and his dad Izzy, and Izzy was very helpful with the film as well. Yeah, and they're saying like, dude, it's the movie. We're just like the movie. You know what I'm like? But there's no, you know what I'm saying? Like,
they really joined in. Oh, yeah. So many guys joined in creating, making it as real as possible.
Did you like Howard?
I was scared of Howard when I read the script.
Why?
I didn't know, because these guys were telling me he's a legend, he's a great, he's a hero, they loved him more than anything. And when I was reading it, I was just looking for the love in the guy. I was looking like, because he's doesn't make decisions that they affect other people, and he overlooked that a lot. So
right.
I was nervous about if I was going to do it right for the guys, but we got together stronger and stronger. They made me feel more confident in what the way I should be and why he was so not lovable, but well, you were then, pulling for him.
Well, you Sandler pushed, you know, incredible, such a hard worker, like one of the hardest working people I've ever met. And that was great, because I can't work enough, and that's all I want to do is just strive.
Right.
And he pushed, and he would find these little things, and just like, you know, Scott Rudin would do the same, you know, like they'd flag moments, like, what about this right here? And if I didn't have an instinctual, if I didn't feel it in my bones, I was like, you know, we should work on that. And we did, and we would piecemeal it. And he would come to New York, and we would sit there till 2-3 in the morning. I don't even know anymore. Yeah. So we like to quote the movie to each other, because we're nerds like that. We would sit there with Ronnie, who we collaborate with, and we would do these readings and every little thing. And he would find these moments to inject the love of, which is, again, like these 20th century iconic, you know, Jews who we look up to. They're loving, like, I mean, someone like Rodney Dangerfield, he wasn't in a movie until he was 60. Think about that.
That's crazy.
He was a star of a movie when he was 60. Think about that life. Think about everything that he put out onto the stage and into his to strive to be bigger, you know. And then, you know, and then I would send him pictures from Ronnie's autobiography of pictures of them too, and my mind's exploding. You know what I mean? This is For me, that's too much. But
that's the thing that's so hard, is conflating all of these different people together into Howard is so hard.
Yeah.
And it's such like a high wire act that I can watch it all the time. Mm-hmm. It's like I never get tired of watching the decisions you're making and the micro decisions with different people.
Well, he's hyper romantic. Gamblers are very romantic people.
Yeah.
It's always can turn.
I'm going to get that win.
Exactly.
And everything's going to turn into a fairy tale.
Think about that. But think about how grating that gets. That's weird when you think about it. Like, romantic people, they can be annoying. You know what I mean? Sometimes.
Get out of the class.
You want to slap him. They can't get back onto the ground. But Howard, what's so cool about Howard is that he is, like, as the movie exposes, he is the universe. and he's like a big ship pulling into a port, and he's rising all the ships around him because he wants everyone to perform with him,
right,
and exceed and be bigger. And he's a solar system.
And the other thing is there's a very, very subtle, like you add with a very subtle bit where you're like, is this going to work? You're doing it, but you're not quite sure if it's going to work. Like, this is the movement I went in, so I'm going full in. But like, I got to make it work. You know?
One of the greatest moments of the entire shoot for me was we were on the stage, and Kevin Garnett was in the showroom, and we didn't have this scripted. And it was like, the only thing I can liken it to is like a playing 2-on-2 basketball, and you're mm-hmm. with your partner, and he's just instinctively knows what you're going to do. And you were going, he's supposed to leave with the earrings to go into the back room. And it's in the movie where he comes back. He's like, don't you have a game tonight? You should be stretching out. But that was all that was scripted, right? But then I just got into a zone. So I would just say one word and it would trigger an incredible one-liner with him. And he'd come out and he'd throw something else. And he just we didn't yell cut. And we probably shot like 11. It's going to be incredible footage. Just kept coming back in and out and just asking popping Kevin jokes, Garnett. Asking Kevin Garnett more and more questions.
You were so, every time you came back, to we were in the back room. Every time you came back, you were so excited.
Like, you look at us. Back. He's like, what else do you want?
I
want
to go back out there. But it was just amazing because everybody was ready for that. Because when you went back out, everybody was still in character in the other
right,
room.
Right, yeah.
They didn't stop. Everybody didn't stop, which was what we wanted. You know, we wanted everybody to kind of be working oiled, right. And it was amazing.
Right now, we're going to take a short break, but when we come back, Adam weighs in on being part of this year's Oscar conversation. Welcome back to The Big Ticket. Here's more of Adam Sandler and Benny and Josh Safdie.
So this is some heavy drama for you.
Yes.
There's comedy, obviously.
Yes.
But this is some real heavy drama for Adam Sandler.
Yes. Yes.
And there's
but are you surprised? You shouldn't be surprised.
No.
It's the best.
No. Yeah. I mean, it's just. Yeah.
It's deep.
Yeah. It's deep.
Yes.
And how about this? So Adam Sandler, let's say you took Howard and put him on SNL. You could do a Howard on SNL.
Sure.
For sure. Interesting.
That would be much like on. Take Howard and put him on steroids.
Right, sure.
But you've grounded him because he's real.
Yes,
he's
yes,
real.
Yeah, yes, yes.
How do you balance that where you're not, you know, going over that line between drama and comedy?
Well, we prepared so much and we got to know so much of who Howard should be and the way he reacts and thinks and, you know, just diving into the scenes and day to day, and discussing stuff before and after, and we were living that movie. We mm-hmm. lived the movie day in, day out, before we shot, during the shoot, after the shoot. We never left each other, mm-hmm. and we loved. We just got. I mean, I got to tell you, wardrobe, sound, everybody. Was starting to love Howard like day three. Yeah. They liked the way he looked, and they knew their Howard. So
right.
It was like, I guess it was just wanting. I don't know.
Because when I first met Howard, uh-huh. I hated him. I hate him.
Well, you know what I admire about Howard? Just strong as hell. Strong
yep.
as hell.
Never gives up.
Fearless. You get into his face, he's right back with you. I don't see him back down in the movie ever.
That slap.
He slaps a guy who's he knows can kick the shit out of him.
Yeah.
Right.
He's never there's not a point in the movie that he doesn't like in the nightclub scene when he's going at it with Damani, the only reason he says, okay, we got to pick a different place to finish this is because there's about five guys with him. Okay, this is definitely going to end bad. But the thing these guys added after me and Lakeith go at it for a bit, and it's going to be a physical fight, which was so real and so cool for Howard, was the fight breaks up. They go back to listening to the Weeknd song, and he's standing behind Lakeith, and Lakeith turns around, and he's like, fuck it. They still can't stop getting crazy with each other.
But think about it. That's so real, though.
That's so real.
Like, think about playing ball yesterday with Sebo and Locke.
They got crazy.
They and we had to switch it up. But then they looked over at each other, and I can tell they still wanted to go at it.
Sure.
But they love each other. You know what I mean?
The thing that I whenever I watch Howard, he's a fake person with real problems. And I feel all the things that you feel. They just feel like, oh my God, these are really affecting this guy. On a deep, deep level. So it's like when you look at, oh, how is Howard not kind of a caricature? It's because I really believe that all of these things are happening to him.
Yes.
And they've been so internalized. And all the decisions are made because of those things. And it's just, I love it.
You got to know him at home.
Yeah.
You got to see him with his situation, that he's kids. He does love his kids. It's off. It's off. He's in his own world. Mm. The gambling's has affected the home life, has affected his wife that's in the process of not wanting to be with him anymore. And just all his worlds, his city life and his Long Island life, and that we've seen people go through. Yeah.
It's interesting though, because I think Jews, we're all, we look at someone like Howard and there is a heroic element to it, but there's also something that you see in yourself in him, you know, that it's just kind of like, oh, the desire to kind of acquire everything so that you can be accepted. You know what I mean? That Sandy was telling us this incredible story about this country club out in California, because there was no Jews were allowed in any other country. So they started their own, and then they had their own rules. But and then you get it and you're like, well, is this what I want? Is this really what I want? Right. Because in the end, it's means nothing. You know what I mean? There's like kind of like an emptiness of trying to, you try to acquire things through one route, and then you realize, well, that's not what it is. And you realize it's about something bigger. Right. And I think that's what it is about. That's what the gambler for me is. It's like, oh, you want, but then you get it and you're like, that's not enough. Right. You know what I mean? He started this family. He got all the kids. He had this awesome house in Long Island. This wasn't enough. So then he's like, all right, let me try a different thing. Let me try to be youthful and be young and go out there and hit big. I want to hit so big that everyone talks about me forever. You know what I mean? And that's what happens in the movie. You're going to talk about him forever. And to hear you still thinking about him after your initial instinct was, oh, I don't like this guy. Yep. Yeah. That's amazing to me, because that's it.
How does it feel to be part of an Oscar conversation? People are saying it.
That's nice. thank you. My first thought was, I love these guys, and I wanted to do the best I could do for them. Mm. And I knew when I read, the opportunity was there when I was working more and more with them and reading the script. Right. I saw, like, this is a role that any actor would be dying to play, and they were nice enough to give it to me. And I worked as hard as I could work on making sure I didn't let them down or let myself down. This is a project that you would not want to say, man, I should have done this. I don't think there was a day I came home and I was saying, man, I should have done this. I felt like I laid it all out there for the guys, and they got it. They told me where they wanted to go when I went to the, I mean, I remember the scene when me and Julia are in the, things are going terrible, and I finally admit something in the movie that it's not going great. And Benny came, they just wanted to make sure it was legit. And he talked to me about his process of getting to a certain place, and it was great to go deep with the guys. That's it. And then the Oscar stuff, I can't think about. It's very nice, but I can't sit and live like that.
So
should have won one for Wedding Singer, Big Daddy.
Thank you. The boys like my stuff.
So do you see a day when I can't even believe I'm asking this. I don't know where the hell this just came from.
What happened?
Like a bar mitzvah theme, Uncut Gems.
That'd be incredible.
Wow.
That would be incredible. Uncut Gems. That's an Oscar right there.
That would be amazing.
That's an Oscar right there.
That would be amazing.
I say you start.
He said there's a Howard table.
The Damani table. Yeah.
Start with a Halloween costume and see if we can get to that.
Because God, I'm obsessed. Just even the glasses, the little piece of gold.
Those are considered jeweler standards. on 47th Street, the Cartier glasses, $7,000 glasses.
Right, but was Howard wearing real ones?
Yeah, yes. He was. Yes. Yes. It was, that was a big question.
All my stuff was real. Yeah. That's so important. And props at the end of the day, you know, when they would get my stuff back, usually it's like, they were very just like, but there was thousands of dollars.
On that FaceTime call, I think you're walking around with like $400,000 worth of jewelry. Yes. I just love it because you look at that image, you're like, oh my God.
Yeah, my Jewish star pinky ring was very expensive. Yeah. On the block, they made me that. That was
custom
made a day before. That was we were stressful, shooting. Remember? We were like, we got to get that Jewish star pinky ring. And then one of the guys goes, let me get that done for you on the block.
That was Adam Sandler and Benny and Josh Safdie. Uncut Gems is in theaters today. Thanks for listening to The Big Ticket. Coming up tomorrow, I have freshly minted Golden Globe nominee Beanie Feldstein, as well as the writer and director of The Farewell, Lulu Wang. Thanks again for hanging with The Big Ticket. See you next time.